Hi, this is Larry London, and I welcome you to Border Crossings here on The Voice of America. Today, we are joined by a singer and songwriter who's been making music for a while now. She performed on American Idol, where she was a finalist in 2007, and she is excited because she's just released a brand new EP called Ascend. We'd like to welcome to The Voice of America, Leslie Hunt. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, I'm very curious what it was like for you. If you can go back to the American Idol days, the show's been on for a while now. You were in season 6, which was won ultimately by Jordan Sparks, but you had a chance to perform for the original 3 judges, Paula Abdul and Randy Jackson, Simon Cowell. What was that like being in front of those music legends and having them critique you? That kind of, you know, sounds to me, I'd be very vulnerable if it were me.
Yeah. And it's funny because I just recently rewatched somebody else kind of asked me for B-roll. So I had to kind of go back and watch what, you know, my own face, finding out that I made it to the top 40, you know, finding out that I made it to Hollywood, all those moments. They were really nice to me for the most part. I think, you know, I came across as somebody ultimately vulnerable and kind, you know, but also brave in that I was there at all. You know, I didn't feel particularly confident as a performer or as a person. I was in my early 20s. And I just remember feeling like I was in front of one of my biggest idols as a kid, Paula Abdul. I mean, that was my rollerblading around the cul-de-sac soundtrack, you know, just two steps right forward, two steps back, you know, just, I was like, oh my God, and she's right there. And it was just so cool. And, you know, I'm a big joker. So I was trying to make light of just about everything that was, you know, just jokes back and forth. So I think that's how I kind of coped with the stress of it. but it was just really cool. I think that they were overall, you know, nice to me in the fact that they let me go so far. You know, I think they saw something in me that maybe I didn't quite see yet. So it was a great opportunity.
It's kind of, you know, something that allows you to mature a lot as an artist, you know, because that's where you really expose in a short amount of time to the Hollywood life of the hair and the makeup and the wardrobe and all that stuff that you probably wouldn't have to otherwise worry about.
And just the long days, just they would pick us up in the morning for months on end, every single day, pick us up in the morning, drop us off back at our hotel rooms at night. And most of the day we would just be waiting around to do, you know, our one thing that we were going to do that day, you know, and otherwise it was just like, we were just hanging out. I don't think I've ever sang so little in my life as I did when I was on that show. And I was so unconfident that I had a hard time warming up, or, you know, everybody else was singing and doing all these runs and maybe trying to intimidate each other a little bit. I don't know, but I could barely sing in the bathroom stall if I saw feet underneath. I was like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I was like trying to go hide and practice my song and I just couldn't. So if Idol did anything for me, my friends all noticed. They're like, you'll just sing all the time now, for better or worse. Like, you're fine with just singing in front of anyone at any time. So thank you,
somebody
Idol,
who
for that.
Is lacking in confidence. You tackled a big song by Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
That's not, and, you know, something that somebody who's a shy does, but
right. So I think I was just good at rising to the occasion in the moment and, you know, being brave and just kind of putting all of that just my lack of self-assuredness aside and just rise to it and just be like, hey, this is what confident people do with their arms, you know. That's what it felt like, you know.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I'm looking at your, I assume it's the album sleeve for the new EP, Ascend. Mm. One of the photos has you at a piano. The other one has you showing off your guns. I mean, you must be a gym rat. Look at that. I mean, you know, come on. You don't get those muscles, you know, writing songs.
True. I do work out. I love the, I think, you know, I have ADHD, and so I need to be like pumping. Like, I need that high intensity workout to kind of like, just kind of like bring everything, focus everything in. And I do a lot of push-ups and pull-ups and stuff.
It's interesting you say now that you have ADHD, because for those who are around the world, we're on in 100 countries, and some other countries, they aren't as caught up in the psychoanalysis that we are here in the US, where everything has a label. Every behavior comes with a label.
And an acronym.
That's it. And an ADHD.
IRL.
I have a small child diagnosed with ADHD. It's a focus thing. So how does that translate into what you do? Because writing songs requires a great deal of focus and emotion.
Right. So historically, you know, it's legal in lots of parts of the world now, but I would lean into cannabis to help me focus, certain strains of cannabis. And now that I'm properly medicated, it doesn't help me focus anymore. So it kind of brings a lot of my ADHD back, actually. So I'm more just kind of like the medication route now. Mm-hmm. But I used to just kind of and we're not talking like heavy duty usage, just right. The littlest bit to just kind of tunnel me in on the task and keep me stationary for long enough to finish the song. Sure. I think it can be very useful, used, you know, responsibly.
Bob Marley's career. So
yeah, right. And it just also kind of quiets the critical voice. Because if you have a very loud one, you're not going to see through an idea. You're going to start it and be like, oh God, this is lame. Or like, this has been done, you know? Mm-hmm. And then if you turn that part off, or at least just quiet it down, you can really come up with some cool stuff. If you stay out of the way, you know, if you stay out of the way of the muse and just let it come, it's really nice.
We're talking with Leslie Hunt. Your first of three EPs is called Ascend. Two EPs. I thought there were three. I know there's a second one coming out in September.
Hey, here's hoping. Maybe I'll do a third one too.
Yeah, well, anyway. Just, you know, why not? What the heck?
Keep the EPs going.
We said it now, so you're stuck. You have to.
Now I'm stuck. Ah, there we go. I'll call my producer right away.
Tell me what the story is with Ascend, because obviously there's got to be a theme. Ascend, descend,
right.
Transcend, let's
definitely
send,
transcend. You know. Yes, definitely. I'm glad you asked. So Ascend was written all in 2019, obviously before any COVID anything was occurring. So it was new love, new beginnings, new awareness. I was, you know, kind of diving into more like a meditative place, kind of drawing my worth and value from sustainable places from within rather than seeking externally. It just feels like a wise phase of my life where I just wanted to put a lot of my new ideas into song. And Ascend kind of tackles the, okay, I had all these plans made, you know, I was ready to just go. Cause I mean, it was really the first solo thing I'd come out with in a long time. Normally I was just writing and recording and touring with my rock band District 97. And then for me to just suddenly be inspired again as a solo artist, it felt like a big deal. And it felt like I was really taking off and going places. And then of course I didn't know I was going to call it Ascend at that time. It needed that descend for that to make sense. So, you know, COVID hits, the plane's coming back down. We don't know how long we're going to be on the ground. We don't know how long this layover is. You better just grab a snack, get comfortable, you know, grab a newspaper, you know, so descend is more about just like being, you know, finding the silver lining in the pause, in the canceling of everything that you had planned, the stillness, the silence that was happening, because if I had all of my gigs canceled. So all the music that I would normally be working on or trying to, you know, learn for the upcoming gig, or the upcoming tour or whatever, I had silence and I was home at night. And so I wasn't in these loud environments. I had so much room for creativity. So it felt like just being cozy and being okay with being powerless for a while, which is not my strong suit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that being cooped up with COVID, as we have been for 15 months or so now, it can take you to a dark place. I mean, as a songwriter, you can start to get negative. A lot of people got depressed, dealt with it in different ways. And I can understand in your career where you have so much interaction with the fans, with the people, and you're cut off from that. I'd be very interested to know how that impacted, as you were going through the process, the songwriting.
I think I write to help myself through things. I write to help to remind myself of things. Because none of it came naturally. You know, it was very depressing because I have, you know, a pretty like quiet home life out here in the burbs, and then contrasting that with a very busy gig schedule in urban environments, mostly in Chicago, my life made a lot of sense that way, you know, being the life of the party, being the person leading the, you know, I do events. That's like my full-time gig is we do 60 events a year or something like that. And I lead a band. So it was so hard. It was like a huge chunk of my personality had just been severed. Hmm. And I was sort of like, well, what's my meaning? I got so into interior design. Like I was just in my house and I was just like, oh, this is all wrong. We need to move this. Oh, and I'm going to finance this sofa that I probably can't actually afford because I have no work. You know, it's just like, I got really into my environment and just like controlling my environment. And, you know, it's funny when you think about the ways that the brain handles those kinds of things. You're just like, oh yeah, I got really like OCD with my house.
Yeah. Well, you needed a creative outlet.
I did need that. Yep.
You're mm-hmm. great with design and fashion and whatnot. Yep.
Wolf Cried Boy. It's a song. I identify as a bit of a, I have love addiction. It's something that I've had since I was a preschooler, just always having a crush on somebody, always being in some kind of relationship. I'm single right now for the first time for an extended amount of time, maybe ever. So this song is about me meeting somebody that felt like the one, and then everybody around me kind of being like, yeah, yeah, like, sure, you know, like you always say that kind of thing. And I love the song because it takes the different perspectives. At first, it's kind of gossipy, kind of talking about the wolf who cried boy, you know, identifying as the wolf in this situation. And then they're kind of gossiping about me, but then the chorus is me kind of clapping back and just being like, that's fine. You can, you know, I do have a problem. I agree. But, you know, but this guy's the one for real. And it sucks because we did end up breaking up, but not for any other reason besides just, we just wanted different things.
Right? You said you're addicted to love or being in love.
It's a thing. It's a thing. It's sort of, you know, just that preoccupation with like romantic feelings and romantic fantasy, and kind of it's coming from, you know, like I mentioned before, the looking for external validation to make yourself feel whole. And it's something that I'm dealing with quite seriously now in a good way. I'm doing the work now to where, like, if I get into another relationship, it will be from a very whole, very not desperate, you know, place of like, please make me feel better because I feel bad on my own kind of thing. And it's hard for, so I think women kind of get programmed to want a man to save them, you know, and I'm comfortable enough to see my patterns of the past and grow from them for myself and for my kids. So
this is a great. You have children?
I do. I have two kids. I have a 5-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's great. So yeah. How do you balance motherhood with the career? Because you're a single mom. So how does that all work out?
I am a co-parent. So I have the kids 50% of the time, mm-hmm. and they have different dads, and we do have them on a pretty similar schedule. And they're also musicians and in the arts. So it's just a very supportive group. Like, you know, if I'm on tour or if one of the others is on tour, we all kind of support. We also all live in my hometown with my family all around. And so my parents help a ton. You know, it's just a big family, family and friends. It takes a village. The kids are very used to, you know, things kind of changing and, you know, spending time with friends and family when we're busy. So
and you started singing at 4. So you have a 5-year-old. Are you encouraging your 5-year-old to start singing? And does your 11-year-old also sing and show creative music's, you know, sense?
They both have perfect pitch.
Wow.
Which is amazing. I did not train either of them to do that. They know when a song is in the right key and when it's not. My daughter has absolute pitch, so I can just play a note on the piano and she can identify it right away, like as quickly as one could look at, like, oh, that's green. Oh, that's red. Like, she's just like F sharp, D flat. Well, like she just can, it's amazing. She's a great piano player. Mm-hmm. She's really, really good. She doesn't love it, but I know that it comes so naturally to her that I kind of make her do it. Cause I'm just like, you don't know yet, but you're going to be so grateful for this one day. Right. And then my son is a really great drummer. And I think he does want to start playing piano, but I don't really force either of them to do much. I do make my daughter play piano, though, because otherwise she would not really do anything.
Right. I didn't make her regret it. Now, but later, like you said, they will look back and be thankful that mom encouraged them to do
it. Right.
That.
It's like learning a foreign language. Like the earlier you do it, the better. It's like very, it's like the same, like reading music, reading a foreign language, understanding it, translating it to your hands.
Yes. Eating
your vegetables. She's really good. Eat your vegetables. Exactly. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. That bitterness, you've got to introduce that as a baby. Otherwise, all throughout their life, they're like, ew, minerals. Yeah.
Again. So yeah. you are in a band, or were in a band, District 97. What is the meaning of that? Is that an area of Chicago, or what's the story of that?
It's a school district in Oak Park, Illinois.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, because the original members of the band all went to the same elementary school in Oak Park. So now there's only one left. We've gotten a couple new band members over the years. I mean, we've been around since 2008 or something like that. So, I mean, it's great. We have 4 studio albums out, many different live albums. We've toured Europe a bunch of times. We toured the States. We do pretty well. So it's a great band. We're still going. We're still writing new stuff, but we have a very loyal, dedicated fan base. And I feel really lucky to have that opportunity to write very complicated stuff with them. And then, but with my kind of pop sensibility. So they present me with this very dense, intense, rhythmically insane stuff. And then they're like, okay, now you make the through line. You make the thing that people could maybe hum again in the future. Mm-hmm. You kind of bring it all home, you know, to where it just doesn't sound like totally madness.
No, that's so cool. I mean,
it's so much fun.
Difficult for you though, because now when you go out on the stage solo, your buddies aren't next to you anymore. You know, that comfort zone is not there.
You're absolutely right. That is such a good point, because if you're writing for the band, it's anybody's guess who wrote it. And so it's less like, obviously just like my feelings, my opinions, my brain, you know, because I don't co-write really at all for my solo stuff, but every single song is a co-write for the band. So I did get used to hiding kind of behind that anonymity. Mm. And now it's all spotlight on me these days. So. Yeah.
And of course, being somebody who likes to be in love, you must have a number of songs about certain guys. Mm-hmm. Do those guys know those songs are about them? Have you ever discussed that and say, this one's about you? Or do they ever contact you and say, hey, Leslie, is that me?
I would guess it's all pretty much assumed. Because it's not like there's, you know, for any given chapter of my life, I'm not dealing with like a bunch of options. It's usually just like one at a time.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So if you look at the timeline and you look at like, oh yeah, we were dating then, that's pretty much a safe assumption that this is about you. So.
All right. That's working for Taylor Swift. So I'm sure it works for you as well.
This is called Your Wind. And if I've gotten any feedback on the EP about any song, particularly, it's this one. It is a love song. It's probably one of my most proud of songs I've ever written in my life. I'm so proud of it. I think, it's important, and
will you be going out on tour internationally? Is that part of the plan for marketing in the near future?
I really hope so. It's hard to know. It just seems like with everything being canceled last year, people are really making up for it this year. So I look at my schedule and it just feels bananas to be able to fit anything in. I'm hoping that when things slow down a little bit, maybe in the fall, that I'll be able to, you know, hit the road with, I know we're going on tour with District 97. I really hope to go on tour with this stuff too. I think that it has perhaps a wider appeal. You know, District 97 is a little more, you have to be into that kind of music. And I feel like my stuff is like very widely probably appealing. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to work on it. I've never booked a tour before. And so I might like ask someone to help me. I don't know. It seems very scary.
It's like kind of risky to do different kinds of music as a solo artist versus a band. And then, you know, also you're kind of the writing changes and it's just kind of, I think, probably very intimidating. That would be the feeling, I would guess. But I guess you've been a solo artist for, you know, all your life anyway.
Yeah, I definitely was a solo artist before I was a rocker in District 97. I think Yeah, because I do find that sometimes the District 97 people cross over to my stuff and sometimes they don't. They're like, oh, what? No, like this doesn't make me want to punch, you know, like this makes me want to sway in my kitchen with a loved one. You know, they want, you know, harder hitting stuff, I think. So that's been surprising, I think, for them. But people that are on this journey with me know that I straddle those extremes, mm-hmm. you know, for sure. So it's not surprising. And I think I bring kind of a delicate, you know, obviously I'm a female, I'm not really screaming in the rock band. So it's like a female voice, you know, a rocking voice for sure, but it's still, you know, it's my voice.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. It sounds great. You have a great voice.
And thanks. It's a little hoarse today.
No, I'm sorry that you're not feeling 100%, but we really appreciate you doing this for us.
So 2008 was a very big year for me. My sister passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Yeah, the same year that I joined District 97, the same year that, you know, I started doing events full time. So it was a huge, it's almost like that loss kind of made me go for things harder than I would have. And this song is for her. It's sort of, I wrote it, you know, the opening line is like, over a decade's passed and like I can see all that I could not before. Like it just took that long for me to see what things were like before she passed away, and how, you know, we both had our share of dysfunctional and destructive patterns, but hers were just more pronounced and more visible to the eye. So you know, but it's sort of like catching, like bringing her up to speed, if like a letter to my sister, basically.
Ascend has a mixture of feelings and emotions. We're on a ride and we're heading up a hill. When Descend comes out, obviously the name Descend is from descent. And so are we going down that hill, or what's happening on the next EP?
It is stylistically pretty different, actually. I was surprised to see how different it was. It's just a lot more soulful. I think I wrote it with more of a home feeling, you know, just being home so much and just kind of thinking about the sounds that I wanted in my home, you know, just thinking about like sitting on the couch or, you know, being in the kitchen, just kind of just vibey home songs. Mm-hmm. And so that works out for some of them. And then one of them is like house dance party song. So it's like more soulful. And there's also even a funk song that covers social justice and police reform and Black Lives Matter movement. So there's just we're covering a lot of ground, I think it's an important EP, and I'm so excited for people to check it out.
Relevant, it sounds. Well, please keep us updated, and when you come to DC and the EPs are out, and maybe you're working on an album at that point, and whether you're with the band or you're solo and you're in DC, we'd love to have you in studio. You and I have some similar things in that I grew up in Oak Park, Michigan.
Oh,
and I went to school at Northwestern in Evanston, not too far away, you know, in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we have a couple little connections there through Chicago.
Yeah.
And I love your music.
You know, the Chicago summers are just the best.
Yes, yes.
It's only been raining for us so far.
That's the key in Chicago. Stay safe.
Right, exactly.
But we've got Leslie Hunt. Now, where can people go to get your tour schedule and keep up on the latest news for Leslie Hunt? I think it's behind you, right? Yep.
LeslieHuntMusic.com is my website. That's my Instagram. That's my Facebook. I'm also on YouTube, trying to stay active on all the places, but I truly don't enjoy it that much. So I put in as much as I can emotionally handle, and then I'm like, no.
A necessary part of the business, I guess.
Yeah, I know. Oh, gotta embrace it.
But, well, thank you, Leslie, for joining
us.
Thank
you so much for having me. It was such a blast.
And I want you to come back. Like I say, when you're in the DC area, we'd love to have you in our studios.
Great. I would love to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing this. It's Ascend, the new EP, and soon we'll get treated to Descend. So thank you for watching. This is Border Crossings on the Voice of America.
This is a country that I chose to become a citizen. I didn't have to become a citizen. I chose to become a citizen.
I feel like America gave me an opportunity to pursue my passion as an artist.
I really believe that clean eating is a way to a more successful life, or a happier life, if you want to put it that way.
One of the things that helps me wake up every morning is doing better, being better.
We grew up poor, and so I'm always focused on helping the working class be able to have a more comfortable lifestyle.
I'm passionate about doing justice every day. I oftentimes say that justice is a verb, not a noun. You know, I believe in action and moving the ball forward.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work. Yeah.